this works today, and I'm going to walk through you the step-by-steps. And every single person should do this because it is a methodical way to find not only the storage assets, but the ones that are right for you. Everyone that listens to this, if you go do that, you will buy a facility that is right for you. That'll be a great opportunity. Welcome everybody to Self Storage Income. And we have got a podcast today that is here by popular demand, I guess you could say, but it's a formatting more of my step-by-step to finding a storage deal. This has been one of the top, we had a podcast like this, it was a while ago. So we were just talking about, how long ago was that we gave like those step-by-step kind of things? A year ago?
At least a year ago, if not more. It's been a while. Like you're talking, it's one of the most common things that we hear about, how do you actually find the deal? What is the deal? How to find the deal? How to, fund the deal? All those really key pieces, which I'm really excited to dive into today, because obviously when you guys first started, you had this process that you went through. And we were talking before the podcast a little bit here and how you guys broke that down initially when you were first starting out. So super excited to jump into it. When you guys were starting out, you're looking at storage, analyzing it. What did that process look like for you guys?
A lot of times now, people can get very complex and they can use a lot of data points and they're trying to learn a lot from other people, which is good, right? Obviously, that's why you're on the podcast, listening to the podcast, everybody. But I think they can get too much information. Mm-hmm. And that information paralysis can start to kill them, because then it becomes like, well, what's the best market? Well, what's this? What's that? And that's not how we determined it, and that's not how we determine it. It's not like we just say, oh, well, let's look up and find the best markets and the best, it doesn't quite work like that. And when we were starting out, we didn't have any information. So there wasn't a podcast, there wasn't a book, there wasn't anything. There was nothing to tell us how to find or buy storage deals. So I had to come up with a individualized, very methodical way to find deals. And that revolved around a few things. And the first thing was like what we wanted in our buy box. And that's probably the most important part for people. And so basically, for those that don't know what a buy box is that buy box is everything that fits into what the type of asset or facility you want to buy and type of market and why. So our buy box was determined by our wanting to have a competitive ability, what we could afford, and the locations that they were in. So simply put is we didn't know a whole lot about storage when we were starting out. So we wanted to go to places where we could compete. We couldn't buy a lot, so we needed to buy small facilities. So, and we wanted to do it in areas that we were familiar with that way.
Yeah.
So that led us to small markets, small deals in the northwest of the United States.
Well, and you guys had like a different idea as far as management was concerned at that point in time too, right?
Yes, we were basically remote management completely at the time. So when we did that, the idea became is how do we find these storage deals? There wasn't brokers that really specialized in storage that we knew of, and there
times
wasn't
have changed.
Yeah, there wasn't, so it was like how do we do this? How do we find this? This is once again the early 2000s. Now, this methodology, everyone, it's important to understand this works today, and I'm going to walk through you the step-by-steps, and every single person should do this. Because it is a methodical way to find not only the storage assets, but the ones that are right for you. That's really important here. And to find the best ones that have the most opportunity. And a lot of people, once again, overcomplicate this. So I'm going to make it very simple, and I want you all to do this. So you're going to follow exactly our footsteps. First of all, the buy box, a small facility in a small market. That was our buy box. That could be anything. So today, my buy box are big facilities in medium-sized markets. That's my new buy box, right? My geographic area, for the most part, is Western United States and South Eastern United States. That's my markets today. Now, back then, that was, you know, not, we wouldn't even think about leaving the Northwest because we didn't understand anything else. So we focused on Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. And there is a freeway that goes around the Northern Rockies. It's does a big loop, and it goes through Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, and then back through southern Idaho, and then back into Oregon, Washington. It kind of makes that loop around. Basically, if you looked at a map, it circles Idaho. So you have Idaho and the edge of Montana, which make up the Northern Rockies. And so this freeway just kind of goes around it. Now, this freeway is important that makes up this loop because this is internal area. The biggest city in this freeway loop is Boise, Idaho. So everything else is fairly rural. We're not talking about, you know, west of the Cascades. So we're not talking about Seattle, Portland. No. When we say Washington, Oregon, we're talking about eastern Washington, Oregon. Very rural, right? So the reason being in growing up in Idaho, I understood rural markets. I was born in a very small town in southern Idaho. That's where my family, most of my family still lives in there. I grew up in Boise as Boise grew, but even me growing up, Boise wasn't big. Mm-hmm. So the small markets made sense to me because I understood the people. I understood the economics. I understand what's happening in them, right? I didn't understand a Seattle at all. I didn't get it. I don't know how the game was played. And plus then for me, there was competition that I didn't understand. You had REITs, things like that, which I didn't know storage, I didn't understand. So the buy box, that's why that buy box consisted there. All right, so what I did is I picked a geographic area in a region of that I understood. It's also important to realize that that region is massive. That is a really big area. Now, it doesn't have to be that big for a lot of people, but for me, the problem is, if any of you that are from the Northwest know that the closest city to us, big city, is 6-8 hour drive away. So in that ginormous area, you're talking about a very small population of people. It's comprised of cities, you know, under 30,000 people primarily. You have Spokane. Mm-hmm. And then outside that, you have a few cities that may be 50,000, but really there's, you know, Spokane, Boise, that's it. And so their geographic area had to do with the amount of opportunities. So when looking at a geographic area, you need to understand it, but you also need to have lots of opportunities. So I didn't say, oh, I'm just going to look for things within an hour of me. Because in Boise, yeah, an hour of you is not very far. That's not far at all.
Still right? In the mountains, in the desert, whatever.
Exactly. You haven't gotten to another city yet. So when we look at that, you need to have opportunity. And storage, you guys, isn't like houses. So you can go to cities, and there's only 3 storages in the city. So what that meant was you can't limit yourself and to say, I want it in the city. Why? Because you don't know if the people in that city will sell it to you. So you're basically saying, well, if somebody will sell it to me, I have to accept the price. And that's the only option I have. And if there's nobody, then I have no options. So you need to be able to have inventory, obviously, to buy. Now, that changes in geographic areas, right? Florida, you could probably stay within a few hours and you're good. But I still wanted to understand it, meaning that I wasn't going the opposite direction. So if you drove from, you know, northern Idaho to Boise, that distance is probably the same for us to get to the Bay Area in California. Just so time didn't matter, right? It wasn't like I was like anything within this time frame because I didn't want to go to the Bay Area. I didn't want to go to Portland. I didn't want to go to Salt Lake. I stayed away from those areas. So comfort, geographic area, and options is how I picked the size and market that I was in. Now, from there, all I did was my buy box was cities that were less than 30,000 people that had small storage facilities because there was no big players in it and no big operators so we could compete. And on that loop, I took all the cities and I made a list of them. All right, so first step, guys, you have your geographic area. Second step, which you understand and have options. You need to make it big enough to where you're encompassing things that you understand, but where you have more and more options to buy. Then the second step is within that geographic area, make a, like I mapped it out. I actually had a map and I had pins all over it. And we listed all the cities. Then I made a list of all the cities within that loop, that freeway loop that came off the freeway. I wanted it to be close to the freeway. And within that region, generally, it didn't have to be that close to the freeway, but it needed to be, you know, we need to have access and need to be in the path. So from there, I made a list of all the cities. And then all the cities, what I did was I took out all the cities that were dying. So then any city that was dying, I said, that's not, that doesn't work for me. And what I did is I took the top five cities that were growing and I thought were good markets in general. It didn't mean size. These were small. Some of these were very, very small cities. We're talking 5,000 people. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, with that, the first step, geographic area. Second step, you list all the facilities in that area. The third step is you rank, and then you get the top five. Then from there, what I did, now this is top five in, you know, Washington, or you can do 10, by the way, if it's big enough. I think mine was actually 10. I think I did the top 10 cities, but then there was a top 10 five because my geographic area was so big and there's so many small cities in it. That meant I had a huge amount of cities that I was not going to invest in, which is just as important, knowing what you're not going to invest in and what you don't want to invest in and why. Mm-hmm. That's really, really important. So I have my top 10. From there, I went to all the those cities. I went and looked at all the cities and I said, all right, I ranked them from best to worst. So first being a growing city, has good income, right? Size didn't matter to me. So that could literally be a city of 10,000 people at the time. That may be different for you now. It's different for me now, but at the time it didn't matter. And if I was starting again, it wouldn't matter either. But then what I did in the top 10 is each city, I then went and found all the storage facilities in that city and I made a list of them. So my geographic area, step one, lists of all the cities, step two. Three, you ranked it. Step four, in your top 10, I listed all the storage facilities in each one of those cities. I went and literally would find them by looking at Google Earth, calling around, looking online, but understanding that Googling it wouldn't pull them up, especially at the time, because that stuff didn't really exist. So it was a lot of Google Earth and driving. I drove a lot at the time. So the facilities that I ranked were done like this. Now, let's say I have out of my top 10, I have my top five cities. And in that top five, the top five cities, I ranked all the facilities. Let's say there's 10 facilities to keep things simple in every single city. The best to worst, my ranking system was simple. The best facility was number one, best location with the worst being managed. That's it. So if I had the best location, but it was the best being managed, that wouldn't be number one. Now, if I had a best location, but the worst being managed, that would be a number one. The number 10 being the least would be the best being managed in the worst location. So then I ranked all the facilities, 10 facilities in that town. So I have 10 cities. Now I make a list of facilities and then I rank the facilities. That's it. Best location, worst being managed, nothing else.
That's such an important piece right there is making sure that what you're looking at is actually going to fit with the, you know, value add or whatever strategy that you plan to deploy.
Yeah.
Because I think people get hung up on that too, where they're just looking at everything, but not looking at like what specifically are they going to do with that asset and making sure that they can actually achieve it with that one. Because like we're talking about, you can't value add something that's already maxed out.
There's no upside to it.
Yeah,
and
really
my
important.
Strengths and what I was trying to do was that value add. And this is the thing though too with that, you notice how simple it is. So what I did is I took two inputs. One I can't change. That's the location. I can't change that. That's why it's so important. And then the one thing that I can change that creates value, right? Those two things equal the best outcome. That's it. Nothing more. I didn't go into it in how many units. I didn't go into it in square footage. I didn't go into it in the income around it. I didn't go into it in quality of the asset, right? Mm-hmm. It really didn't. It was very, very simple. That will come a little later, but that was the point though. This is simple. So first step is geographic area. Second step is the cities. markets, excuse me, then I rank those markets. Then I limit those. The fourth step then would be to rank all of the assets in my top markets. The fifth step would be to rank all of the assets on best to worst, predicated on the unchangeable input and the changeable input. That's it. From there, now I have a list of my top five cities and the top five assets in each one of those cities that get me exactly what I want. Predicated on my buy box, markets I want, assets that are in good locations that have big upside value. I now have my exact hit list of what I want to buy to deploy my strategy to make it work. So then all of a sudden, I had essentially 50 facilities, top 10, and then the five facilities in the top 10, which when you're in small facilities, everybody, that's obviously going to drop down. I'm using round numbers. That may be only three or two. Sometimes we had two or one facility that I said, that's the best one. The other ones I don't even want. But we're using it simple. You have five facilities in each market, 10 markets. That's 50 facilities. Okay. So now I have 50 facilities that I know are ones that I would buy. Now, this is the very strategic way. So this is the way that you hunt, okay? Right. So I look at this and say, to use a fishing analogy, this would be the fly fishing approach as opposed to the bait fishing that you put bait on, throw it out, and you hope something comes by and bites it, okay? That would be go talk to a bunch of brokers, go talk to a bunch of people, tell them what you want, tell them that you have all this money you're ready to do. That's throwing the bait out and sitting there. And then you're waiting for a broker to come along and bite the bait. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is we're going into the river. We're figuring out exactly what those fish are eating. We're matching the hatch identically. And then we're putting that thing that they want and are eating in front of them based upon those conditions. Like we are targeted here. Mm-hmm. We're not sitting around waiting.
Right.
I know exactly where they are. I know exactly what size those fish are. I know what they're eating. I know what I have to do.
When you guys are looking at property management software for your storage facilities, there's a ton of options out there, but no other option compares to Tenant Inc. Tenant Inc. is going to be your one-stop shop solution that has an amazing amount of tools that you can deploy at your fingertips to maximize the value of your facility, to operate it more efficiently, more effectively. They have an open API where you can back in almost anything you want. You own your data, and it's just an incredible solution. I can't say enough good things about these guys. Link is in the show notes. Be sure to check out Tenant Inc.
Are you a new self-storage investor and want to know what that facility is worth, what the risk is, how to underwrite it? Well, that's exactly what we do in a feasibility study. A feasibility study, we actually look at the market for you. We look at the finances, the underwriting. We show you where the upside is, the downside, and all the risk. That is actually what you can provide to banks to get capital and investors. It's a big worksheet, which most banks actually require. So if you want to know what a storage facility is worth that you're looking at, come to us, follow the link in the show notes, and we will tell you.
When we get to that step in that rundown, from there, now I have my hit list. I got it. Now I can deploy a strategy that would consist of outreach and what we're trying to do. Now, this may be a whole nother list, okay? We're talking about right now, we're really trying to dive in is a beginner's guide to finding storage deals in any market, the step-by-step. So right there's your step-by-step to finding deals. Now, when it comes to actually getting those deals, this becomes different because when you're getting those deals, when you're trying to find these deals, all we've done is found the assets, what we want to buy, why we want to buy them. This doesn't include the owner. This doesn't include who's willing to sell, everything else. That is the next step. From there, then you would start more of the reconnaissance. You would start ranking those facilities by owners that are willing to sell, opportunities, so on and so forth, which we will build that out in another list on how to get an owner to sell to you. But that as a starting point, like we are totally perfect. We're good. We should be just fine with saying this is the storage facilities. This is where we want them to be. This is how we want them to look. And you have a perfect outline to go find them. This is not random. This isn't just assets. These are ones that you want to buy. This list should actually be cultivated over years. So, and it was. We cultivated that list for 10 years. Like, we went and found owners, things like that, and we bought a bunch of those facilities. But it was something, once again, that we were very targeted. We were taking our time. Then the opportunities also came to us through other market ways. We had brokers. We had people that were connections. Those things came to us, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the key to understand about getting deals is, first of all, you have the step-by-step to finding deals in any markets, right? This is regardless of timing of the market. This is regardless if it's up, it's down, right? These are the assets you want to buy. But then the other avenues we have are getting brokers, building those relationships. So more of the waiting, more of the throwing the bait out and hoping that somebody takes the bait. That defines, though, the exact same way. So if you look at, if I do that list, then I go to a broker and I'm talking to a broker and he's like, well, what do you want? First of all, I can say, this is exactly what I want. And I have my list of 50 facilities that meet my exact criteria. And I can use those facilities as examples. I'm looking at these markets. Here's the five markets I want. Here's the five types of facilities. Here's where they are. Here's how they run. Mm-hmm. Here's what to do. That broker is going to look at you and be like, you know what you want.
Yes, dude. I was just like, as you were talking about that, I'm sitting here smiling because I'm like, how many people are showing up, you know, at a brokerage firm with that list doing that thing? Like, freaking nobody.
Nobody.
And
nobody.
I mean, that's the security that those brokers want and need to see from serious people out there to do serious things, because they get a lot of not serious people contacting them, hoping that they can just provide them all the deals in the world and they just solve all their problems. Yep. And it's just this easy thing. And that's not what they do. That's not what they do. And so, yeah, you show up and have a list like that and outline just, I mean, perfectly. Their jaw's going to hit the floor and you're going to be off to the races.
Exactly. They're now going to be excited. Why? Yeah. Because brokers, and you guys have heard me talk about this before, but all they are market makers. That's it. Nothing more. They make markets. They have buyers and sellers. They put them together and then you have a deal. That's why they're so valuable to us, is because they make a market for us, right? That's what we want them to do. Go make a market. Well, could you imagine trying to make a market when, if you were out to buy a car, and the car salesman comes out and says, hey, what do you want? And they sell every kind of car imaginable. And you say, I want a good deal on a car that's perfect for me. What are you looking for? Well, I'm not telling you any of that. What size? Do you want an SUV? Do you want a small car? Do you want gas, electric? I'm not telling you that. Now, go get my car. Like,
I don't know. You tell me. Like, what do I want?
What do I want? And they're like sitting here, I have thousands of cars here.
Yeah.
You're not even giving me direction. I don't, like, you're not serious. Like, they don't even know what to do, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at it, when we work with brokers, I understand that the deals the brokers get, we don't want all of them. Mm-hmm. In fact, we probably want very few of them. So we want them to know what ones we want. So when they're out looking for those deals, they go, we have this. Brokers call us up. I found a facility that's for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they say. This one's for you. Meaning they looked at that asset and thought, that's an AJ deal.
Well, a lot of times they'll do that before it even goes to market because they know, hey, this guy's serious. And the amount of value that alone can help you achieve and not only find the deal, but actually closing deals and getting them under the belt, like getting those things done before they actually go to market is there's so much value.
Oh, we went a decade and I never bought an on-market deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because the brokers knew. And two, during that decade, almost all, I mean, well, 80% maybe, 75% of all the assets we bought were through a broker. He knew exactly what we wanted. He would call up, he wouldn't even have OMs done, anything else. Mm-hmm. So I'll share a story with you guys. I was at a conference with our managers up in McCall. So we were up in McCall, and I got a call from my broker, who I've worked with forever. And he said, AJ, I got a deal for you. And he said, let me tell you the parameters of the deal. He was like, this is your deal, right? It's in a market you want to be in. It's close to your other markets. It's 85,000 square feet. There's low cap X. It's got a market spread of this. This is how it's being managed. And the owner wants this price at this cap rate. And I literally said, okay, go buy it. He's like, well, I'll have all the information done. And I'm like, okay, just, but go tell him, get it under contract today, right now, go. Mm-hmm. We went under contract. I'd never even seen the asset. He knew so well what we wanted. And I was so clear on it that I knew that when he brought an asset, I knew exactly what he was bringing me. So I could go immediately under contract because that call, it was 5 minutes. I knew he found a home run and he knew he had it. Now, the benefit to him is that, do you know how much time, work, effort that we saved him? He transacted that deal with a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And that deal was a huge payday to him, right? Huge to us. And the owner got it sold, got it done. It was a win-win for everybody. That deal is one of the best deals we've ever done. And it was done in less than a 5 minute phone call. Now, that is the relationship that I want with brokers. And that's not one too, though, that comes short, quick, and easy. And this is the thing I think people think about. They're like, well, I want brokers to do that to me, AJ, that do or to you. Yeah. Well, then go work with them for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And well, this list that you produced, well, how do I get all these people just to sell to me? Well, that's not how it works. You have to build relationships. You have to do the work. So that list that I made and that broker that we're talking about has made me literally something like over $70 million in equity that's created. That's not what we paid for it. That's not the value of the assets. But once again, we're talking about over a decade. So when we started out, it was slow and it was hard. When we started out, that broker I'm telling you about that gave me the call, me and him would go sit for hours, literally hours. We'd sit for 3 hours and we would debate the state of the market. We would debate what all of this money coming in from QE during 2008 would do to the market, how self-storage was going to change, which assets were the best, how you underwrite, why he would argue points on why it's actually better to buy a lower cap rate. So I was stuck on this thing where I thought it needs to be an 8+ cap, right? And he is actually the one that showed me and convinced me that it's better to buy something at a 6 cap that has this spread in these markets than it is to buy something that has an 8 cap that doesn't. It fundamentally changed the way that I view it. Now, there is other things too that I pushed back on him and he changed his mind about. But if you see what I'm talking about, we came to an understanding together.
Mm-hmm.
So our understand of the marketplace, assets, what we want to buy, how we want to buy everything else, he brought it to me. He knew, okay, I have a buyer. He could go get a seller. Markets are made and it's great for every single person in that thing. But to get that relationship, we worked through a lot of deals. A lot of them I said no on. A lot of them I said yes. And I would take and we would actually rip the underwriting apart. Say, this is what we don't like and stuff. And we'd sit there and debate it.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go through it. And he's like, no, this is what you're missing. And a lot of times he was right. But that value, everyone, isn't given. It's created. And so work really hard on the creation of the value, not just getting it. So when you go to fly fish, the hours that you spend studying, preparing are wild. You want to go bait fishing, it doesn't matter. Go stick a friggin' worm on a hook and go throw it in. Hopefully a fish will come by and get it. Fly fishing, you have to learn how to cast, how to present the imitation of the food to the fish in a place where the fish are. We talk about dead water a lot because people fish in areas where there's no fish, just like they go try to invest in areas where there's no investments, right? And there's no opportunity. Well, you have to spend all this time practicing the presentation. You got to match the hatches. You got to figure out why fish do what they do, the time of the day, on and on and on and on. But then once you get it, I mean, I'll go out and I'd have days where I'd catch 60 fish. It was just reeling them in, literally, just cast after cast after cast. And bait fishermen wouldn't catch anything. So this stuff is all about preparation and it's all about creating the value. And then once that value is created, then you can exercise it and you can actually go out and get it. So the whole point of our step-by-step guide is that it's not complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice everything I just told you to do, that is a winning strategy all day long, every single day. Everyone that listens to this, if you go do that, you will buy a facility that is right for you. That'll be a great opportunity. You're not going to do it tomorrow. Okay. You may. I've had that happen. We walked into a facility that we wanted and we did a handshake deal literally that moment within 15 minutes of talking to the owner and we bought the facility. That's rare.
Yeah.
Everybody. That's really, really rare. It's exciting when it happens, but
experiences may vary.
Yes. Experiences may vary. You're exactly right. We're going to put a warning label on that one. But the point being is it's simple, but it's not easy and it's not quick. If it is, that's great, but that happens to be luck of the draw. So it's not that it can't be, but you shouldn't have the expectation of it being. You need to understand those deals. You need to create the value within yourself, within the marketplace, that they understand it. You need to be prepared to transact. And also, these things are compounding, meaning the more deals I transacted, the more I executed, the more people saw, the more they understood, the more they knew and trusted and believed in us, the more opportunities came to us, the better I got at underwriting, transacting, everything else. So the first deals that we were buying were really slow. I questioned myself a lot. Afterwards, it got more and more mechanical. Because we had it tuned in everything.
Yeah, I was going to say the effort compounds as well, like with the opportunity,
vastly,
right?
Vast.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, the amount of effort that you're putting in today is vastly more impactful versus the effort that you were putting in then. Because, again, you just have that compounding effect of the actions you take now have just such a wider effect on everything versus, you know, those more minute and micro.
If you look at it, perfect example. We built our company from 2004 to 2019. So however long that is, whatever that is, 10 plus years, right? We built our portfolio. From 2019 to 2022, I over doubled the entire portfolio. And that's because those actions then compounded. Now, we're obviously talking about 400 plus million in assets, everything else. But it shows, though, how those actions then compounded. And two, what happened was the first 3 years, super slow. One every 2 years, small assets. Then big assets. Then we started to get them once every year. Then it was, now we're getting two a year that are big assets, multi-million dollar, really big assets. And then we started to refinance, and then we started to buy more. And so you're right, the efforts back then compounded and we leveraged today. Now, what we learned and the efforts that we put in are infrastructure today that we can leverage to have higher results. But the efforts then are what build the foundation of today and make it so we can get higher results. And it actually means way more back then than it did today. So what it took us to do in a year, today we can do in a week, right? I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, and what's crazy too is I think a lot of people get caught up in the idea of like, oh, well, you know, like in 6 or 12 months or 2 years or whatever, like, I don't want to have to wait that long. But like almost every time, at least what I've seen is those 2 years are going to go by anyways.
And faster than you think.
Yeah. 95% of the time, that mindset of those people, those individuals are still there that year or two later.
Yes, I still don't want to wait.
Same place.
And you're like, you have been waiting.
You're like, but it's been 2 years.
Yes.
Imagine where you could have been if 100%. You just went, you know?
And two, not only that, but this is different. When you're dealing in storage, this isn't a little house that you're going to make $200 a month off of, right? This is one deal can literally change everything. So I know people that got one deal and retired off of it. That's all it took. Literally, one deal. It took them 3 years to get that deal. They retired in 3 years. When you start looking at it that way, 3 years is not a long time at all.
Exactly right.
All of a sudden, it's like, well, what would you do if you could say, instead of retiring at 80 and you're 30, 50 years, you could just work your brains out for 3 years and be done. That's a no-brainer when you put it like that. It's like, yeah, I'm going to work my brains out. I'm going to work all night. I'm going to work all day. I'm going to take risk. because instead of 30 years, in 3 years, I can get what I would have done. And when you start to reframe those things and look at it like that, yep. and also know that after that, then that 3 years worth of work, I can now do in 1 year and time frame and half the work and still get the output. And then I can do in 6 months and a fraction of the work and still get the output. Then all of a sudden in 5 years, you're not only retired, you're living a whole different kind of life. And then in 10 years, you're shocked by where you were.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still, once again, 20 years from where you would have retired anyways.
Right.
So it's a big difference.
It really is, man. So much value to be had. But with that said, next up, we're going to be talking a little bit more in depth about some of these things. Yeah. So we talked a little bit about how to find deals, but like we were talking a little bit ago here, we're going to be talking about not only how to find the deals, but then how to
buy them,
how to analyze them.
Step by step, just like we did right now.
Yes. Looking forward to it, man.
So, all right. See you on the next one, everybody. Thanks.
See you guys.